Hey guys, welcome to the WWE podcast for this Monday Night Raw review. And we've got a lot to talk about tonight with Randy Orton now shifting his focus and setting his sights on Drew McIntyre and the WWE Championship. Asuka versus Sasha Banks for the Women's Championship. I've got some very strong thoughts on the finish of that match. Andrade and Angel Garza earned themselves a tag team titles match, and of course a lot more. So you're not going to want to miss this one. We're going to get everything started right after this. Hey, so for you women out there, do you ever want to be super comfy at the gym but still look good? Then head on over to spendaz.com and look for the Women's Velour Tracksuit. That's spendaz.com, S-P-E-N-D-A-Z.com. So what is the Velour Tracksuit? It's a breathable fitness tracksuit, and it's perfect for all your workouts, adventures, or just a chill day at home. And it's made with BreatheTech technology. It ensures maximum comfort and stops annoying sweat from ruining your day. And again, head over to spendaz.com, S-P-E-N-D-A-Z.com, and look for the Velour Women's Tracksuit. There's also a sale going on for a limited time right now. So if you want something super comfy to work out in and it looks great, then look no further than the Velour Tracksuit. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to spendaz.com today. S-P-E-N-D-A-Z.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
All right, guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It's your Monday Night Raw review. And boy, a lot happened last night, didn't it? It's SummerSlam season, so we shouldn't expect anything less, as SummerSlam is just a mere few weeks away, and we are now starting to see the card take shape. We're starting to see what those matches could be. We got a couple of answers this past Monday on exactly what the main event's going to be. That's one picture. And we've got the tag team division squared away a bit. It looks like the Street Profits are going to defend against Angel Garza and Andrade. So let's, you know, here's to hoping that Andrade and Angel Garza can get some type of just something going. They have, and I'm not going to say that the M word. I refuse to say that overused word. They need some forward progression. How about that for a change of pace? That's exactly what they need, and I really hope that they decide to drop the belts from the terrible comedy act of the Street Profits that are ultra talented in the ring, but instead are they're more highlighted as comedy, which is unfortunate. And we have Angel Garza and Andrade who are just pure wrestling, right? They scream pure wrestling, and I'm hopeful that the tag team belts will change hands, and so we'll see there. Of course, we got a really head-scratching conclusion to the the Sasha and Asuka Raw Women's Championship match, which just to me made no sense in so many different ways. It made everyone look bad. Everyone looked bad for what was an absolute thriller of a match. To end it that way was, it was hard. It was hard to see that the logic behind that finish really, really didn't make a lot of sense. So buckle your seatbelts for my thoughts on that one. And yes, we did get the anticipated start of the rivalry between Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre that is now officially confirmed to headline SummerSlam, and we're going to get into that as well. But first, some housekeeping things. If you guys want to check out a really, really just great YouTube channel, obviously you love wrestling, you're going to love this one. The channel is called The Botch Guy. So what he does is actually streams 4 days a week. He does live streaming as well. He's really down to earth, And he also has a great sense of humor. So this isn't just kind of some straightforward, boring analysis. He has a big emphasis on community building as well. It's the Botch Guy. Definitely check him out on YouTube. And I really hope you guys do, because not only is this a great YouTube channel, and he does quick videos where he reacts to certain segments of Raw and SmackDown. We are also going to be collaborating for a dual SummerSlam review show. So that'll be coming in the next, 4 weeks or the day after SummerSlam. We'll fine tune the details and everything as we get closer, but go and check out the Botch Guy, okay? Because he is going to be, I think, a great mix with this show as we do some collaboration and work together and do some review shows together. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So, plus his YouTube channel is just a blast to go through. I was on there for over an hour today and it just flew by. So if you love wrestling and you love kind of like shorter segments of instant reactions to certain things, definitely check it out. All right. The other thing I want to do is give a shout out to one of our listeners, because it's his birthday coming up in just a few days, and that is Brandon Holder. He's going to be turning 30. So, Brandon, happy birthday. Thank you for being a listener of the show. Much appreciated, and hope your 30th is a good one, despite all the insanity that's happened this year. I've only got 5 years on you, and 30 felt like last year. Man, oh man, when you hit 30, things just things really hit you, right? Because when you're 18, you think by 25, you're going to be married with kids. And then 25 rolls around and you're like, yeah, that didn't happen, right? You can't look around and you're like, this isn't the life that I thought I was going to live. And then by 30, I actually had, by 30, I started to get my life together and got married and obviously had a kid and all that later on. But Brandon, happy birthday in just a couple of days. So, all right. Moving on here to one last thing, and then we're going to get to the Raw review, is the call-in. One of you guys took advantage of the voicemail that I have set up for our show, which, by the way, is 518-952-0247. That's 518-952-0247. Again, this is not a manned line. I promise nobody's going to answer, and it's not going to be awkward. It just a few rings, and it goes to voicemail. And what that'll do is get you on the show for comments, questions, rants, or suggestions. And that's exactly what one of our listeners did here. So let's take a listen, and then I'll respond.
Hey, this is the Waz. I'm just calling because I'm just tired of this Rey Mysterio, Seth Rollins thing. I'd like to just see it in. And then the whole way that these announcers, whether it's Samoa Joe or any of them, they just constantly are saying things that don't make sense, that don't fit. They're giving Seth Rollins a hard time because and calling him a hypocrite because he's beaten up Dominic. Dominic attacked him. What do they expect? He's of course he's going to do that. So I'm just tired of things like that. I'm happy to see Baylor back. I want to see her doing more things. The Queen of Spades, I think she's really great, and I'd like to see her actually in the main event soon, hopefully, not just these side little stories don't turn out to be anything. So hopefully her and Nia Jax make something work. Hopefully she doesn't get hurt by Nia Jax. And I just still don't feel like SmackDown's doing very well. Raw's doing better. SmackDown just sucks. I don't like it. And hopefully that they can make some changes here soon. And I did like the thing with Stephanie last week coming on the screen and acting kind of like a commissioner or general manager or whatever you want to call it. I would like to see them bring somebody in that does something more like a Steven Regal does for NXT. And they're there, but they're not wholly involved. And then maybe, that the fans are not the fans, but the wrestlers won't start making their own, matches and so-and-so supposedly got this approved. We could get past that and actually have somebody, that we can rely on, whether they just say their name or they actually come out on the screen or into the circle. Something where we have somebody that's making those matches and they're not just randomly saying that they're happening. So that's my thing. I love Seth Rollins. I love what they're doing with him. I wish they would make his group bigger. I actually think it would be a great idea to suddenly McAllister or whatever his name is, starts following him. And Dominic, I thought that's what was going to happen the whole time, that Dominic was going to suddenly be one of his disciples. So anyways, have a good one.
Hey, Waz. So thanks for chiming in here and taking advantage of the voicemail. Great points here. And I'm gonna bring up the Dominic thing in my beginning of my review because, to be honest with you, I don't understand the logic here that announcers are trying to give about Dominic, or somehow Seth is the bad guy here. I mean, he's a bad guy just because he's an unlikable character that's delusional that he's a true messiah, right? I get it, but storyline-wise, this makes no sense that Dominic is the one that's justified here. Yes, Rey Mysterio was first attacked by Seth. Got it. But then you have the eye for an eye match, with which Rey Mysterio came up with. And that's how you win the match, by the way. This wasn't just something extra that happened. And it's somehow sadistic if Seth did it, but it's justified if Rey did it. And then Dominic attacked Seth again. So what's Seth supposed to do? Right? I mean, it's just so ridiculously backwards that I think it's hurting the potential real heat that Seth could be getting. And furthermore, Seth never really decided to own the fact that he, quote, blinded Rey Mysterio and took out his eye. And that is the thing that I'm not really understanding. As a heel, you want to own that stuff. You don't want to feel empathy for the person that you did it to. That's the whole point, right? You're supposed to be merciless, vicious, right? And instead, Seth is feeling some kind of way where he is reluctant to do things, and he's saying that it's their fault. And it really is their fault. It is their fault because Seth started the whole thing, but the match stipulation was picked by Rey. That's the problem. And Seth didn't do anything other than the stipulation that Rey chose, and Seth fulfilled that stipulation, so he wins the match. End of story. And yet Seth somehow doesn't own it. He didn't say last week on Raw, "I loved every second of it." I was expecting that. That's a bad on WWE. Creative. Why would you not have Seth own it and give an evil smirk that he absolutely deep down loved it? And then you have Dominic confronting Seth. Seth trying to defuse the situation as the heel. As the heel. And Dominic comes and attacks Seth. And what's Seth supposed to do? I would do the same damn thing, right? I'm not understanding why we're supposed to dislike. I'll be able to talk tonight, guys. I promise. I'm not understanding why we're supposed to dislike Seth Rollins beyond his character. Because his character's choices are reactionary. Right? His character choices are reactionary to someone attacking him and just really in self-defense. Yeah, I'm still liking what they're doing with Seth Rollins in terms of a character perspective, which is really holding this whole thing together because the storytelling has been a little bit subpar in terms of just congruity and logic. So Dominic is the one that's actually the bad guy here, attacking Seth from behind a number of weeks ago. And then attacking Seth again when Seth was just trying to defuse the situation. So good point there. I mean, just all around good point. And I guess I'm in the Raw review now because now you got me going. So that's my Dominic point this week. I don't know where they're going to be going with him down the line. Do I see a Dominic versus Seth one-on-one? Not for SummerSlam. It seems as if they're heading for a tag team match between Seth Rollins and Murphy versus Dominic Mysterio and Aleister Black. I mean, I guess that's a SummerSlam match. It doesn't exactly scream SummerSlam worthy. It screams Raw main event, maybe. But Dominic is clearly here to stay. He has showed some fire, at least. He showed some fire with the kendo stick. He had a lot of emotion on his face. That was nice to see. He's not just going through the motions playing wrestler. He seems like he's been trained pretty well. So I like that, and Aleister Black continues to just get pummeled week after week. I mean, I don't know what they're doing with Aleister Black at this point. I mean, Aleister Black was high on the list of guys that you would have said could be world champion or should be world champion in 2020. I mean, I would, and I'm the one that also said it too. So it's just very striking that the fall that Aleister Black has had from just a winning perspective. And from a mic perspective, I mean, he hasn't really said a whole lot over the last few months. Well, for that matter, Kevin Owens hasn't even been around for the last few months. Boy, where the hell is Kevin Owens? Anybody know? Is he injured again? I haven't heard anything. I don't know where Kevin Owens is. It's kind of sad that they can't find something for Kevin Owens to do, especially given the lack of star power and depth that both rosters have. I'm not understanding that they just can't find something for Kevin Owens to do beyond occasionally come out of, comes out of nowhere after a WrestleMania ankle injury, hosts a KO show, kind of reignites his feud with Seth, that goes away, and then he goes away. So I don't know. It's hard to not understand. It is hard to understand why WWE is not using a talent like Kevin Owens. I know Kevin Owens has been very vocal about going back to NXT. I would second that. I think him and NXT are a match made in heaven with his style of wrestling and what he could do for the NXT brand. Going back, I think would be, I think he would enjoy it because it's going back to just the fundamentals of professional wrestling, and what makes wrestling work is what NXT does. So I think Kevin Owens and NXT would be a great, great match at this point in his career. Kevin Owens has made that very vocal as well. The matchups he could have with like Adam Cole, Velveteen Dream, Keith Lee. I mean, Kevin Owens could certainly make a splash in NXT, but that remains to be seen. So I don't know how I got on Kevin Owens. But Dominic, I'm here to see what they do with him. I don't want... It's hard to believe that somebody like Dominic has any kind of chance against somebody like Seth Rollins. It's still hard for me to believe. Right? Because Dominic still is kind of in my mind as the little kid that Rey Mysterio had. And yes, that was back in, 2004 when they fought for custody of Dominic, when him and Eddie Guerrero did that. Hilarious storyline, by the way. If you haven't seen it, go back. I think it was 2004 or so. Check it out. But he's kind of like a kid. He's got a very young face. He still looks like he's, 15 years old. I'm not bashing him. I mean, certainly youth is always great to see in WWE, but it just doesn't feel like he has the credentials of somebody that could beat Seth Rollins one-on-one. And is Rey Mysterio officially retired? Retired? I don't think so. The announcers continue to drive the narrative that he's healing, right? He's healing up, and that would tell you that maybe this program with Seth and Rey is not over. Maybe this could be revisited in sometime in Survivor Series, or maybe October for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. There's time. There's time for this, and if they continue to update us medically on Rey Mysterio every week, I would say that that's a hint, or at least every couple weeks, that's a hint that Rey Mysterio's not done and that he could be coming back to seek revenge. So this whole thing may not be over yet. Okay, moving on though to some of your other comments. I'll just kind of follow your questions or your rants really, because you brought up some good points too about Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Nice to see these two back. Yes, we all hope Nia Jax doesn't injure somebody. That's been well documented, and she's extremely defensive about that, it seems, and I guess with a little bit of justification on that, because I'm sure not every single time that she's injured somebody has been completely her fault. It's just that she is the common denominator for a lot of these injuries. Doesn't look good. Certainly some of them have been the majority of her fault. And, Charlotte is her latest victim, and, Charlotte was going out for surgery. Kairi Sane was her last real victim. I guess victim's a strong word. Maybe her latest casualty. I don't know how that's any better, but it sounded like it would be. But Nia Jax is back. Okay, she's back. And I personally, I've said this many, many times on this show, I really don't like Nia Jax. And I'm not just saying that from a character perspective. Her character's kind of lame. She's got her look going for her. She's got her pretty face, but she's a big girl. She probably weighs north of 240. I mean, but a lot of it's muscle. Some of it's not. I mean, let's be honest. I don't think that her weight exactly helped her with her knees last year getting double knee surgery. It's physics. I'm not body shaming for anybody that's, out there. Oh my God, he's talking about big women. No. It's just straight out physics, folks. Right? It's science. If you put more weight on a joint, you have a much higher chance of injuring that joint. End of subject, right? So those of you that are out there in our very sensitive 2020 world that are thinking that I'm body shaming women, good grief. I just know, the thing is, I just know somebody out there is thinking that. But I'm saying that her look and her weight is an asset because it makes her stick out like a sore thumb from the women's division. That's good. That's good because you want differentiation from the women's division, which is majority kind of thin, toned muscle women. And she certainly is the opposite of that. And that's a good thing for her because that has protected her from her lack of character development. Because certainly we know nothing about Nia Jax. We know she's kind of got a nasally voice. And that, I mean, that's just her natural voice. It's just what it is. She's got a very nasally tone. She's not a bad promo. She just hasn't maybe been given a lot of material to talk about. It's just been kind of short and sweet. And I get it. I'm not saying promos are easy. They're hard as hell. But at some point in your career here, you got to start to take on a little bit more of a load. And, character perspective and on her own shoulders of saying, hey, I want to push this character. I want to deepen this character beyond I'm a large woman that will dominate you. Like, give us more, right? Why do you want this? What makes us hate you? Why should we hate you other than because you're just annoying flat out, right? I don't know why they just don't give us more with Nia Jax. It's just simple storytelling and they can't do it. But nonetheless, Shayna Baszler's back. Always good to see. She's pretty short and sweet on the mic as well, but she's got a great presence. I think she is the better athlete. There's no question about it versus Nia, but Nia has the size, right? That's the story they're going to tell. And more importantly, who's playing the heel in this and babyface? Because Shayna never really turned back to babyface, but I guess the lesser of two evils is by default the babyface here. So if I was using that logic, Shayna Baszler would be the babyface, and it felt like she should be. It just, like when I was watching that, I'm thinking there was no definitive turn for Shayna Baszler. It was never defined. There was no big moment. There was just nothing. She came off of WrestleMania, broke a few people's arms. Sarah Logan went to wherever she's going to, and she broke somebody else's arm. That was, I think, a local talent, and then she just went away. We didn't see her until she attacked the ninjas last week or the week before, and then she's back and saying that she's the dose of reality or the reality check for the women's division, and so she's kind of getting a reboot here. But my point is, I don't know about you guys, but Shayna Baszler just felt like the baby face here. She felt like the protagonist in this program just by really again lesser of two evils. Just because we know more about Shayna Baszler than we do about Nia Jax. Therefore, if we know somebody a little bit more than the other, we tend as human beings to side with the person that we know versus the person we don't. That's where the old adage of deal with the devil you know versus the devil you don't. Right? So that seems to be the logic here. I would assume that's the path they're taking. I'll be very shocked if they try to do the opposite and pull Nia Jax as a babyface, which never works. Just doesn't. So these two get into a big brawl, which tells you that a future match is coming. And I'm fine. I'm fine. You know, new matchups, right? New matchups are good. It's not the only thing. I know WWE likes to say that or think, and I really believe that they really overestimate the importance of new matchups. And this is the infamous McMahon speech that they gave a couple of years ago when ratings were tanked. Remember when all the McMahons came out and Stephanie was like, we're going to give you what you want, new matchups. And I think Triple H said new matchups too. And it's like, yeah, new matchups are good, but that's not a solution. That's kind of like secondary to actually developing characters we care about and building new stars and then giving us a program that makes sense and having a beginning, middle, and an end. Not just superficially saying new matchups. Well, that's a very lazy analysis. It's kind of like just saying we're going to give you a more athletic presentation. I still don't believe that that is going to be the future of wrestling. I really hope not, because I don't think that has a long shelf life. It has to be about storytelling, deep characters, building stars. Pretty damn simple. Not easy. There's a difference. It's not an easy thing to do. It's just a simple thing to do, meaning it's not overcomplicated. The steps aren't easy, but it's not hard to figure out what needs to be done, because wrestling has been figured out. Over the last 50 years, wrestling has been figured out of what works and what doesn't. And star power always wins. Star power wins in TVs. It wins in movies. It wins in major sports in all walks of life, whether it's the NHL, NBA, MLB. Star power draws ratings. And pro wrestling is not immune to that logic at all. In fact, I would argue that they are even at a higher level of needing star power, because they can manipulate who's in what position rather than just hoping that the biggest stars are at the end of the road, right? You want to see the biggest stars, the biggest teams in the World Series, typically, right? And the biggest stars in the Super Bowl. So pro wrestling is no different. I don't know why it needs to be overcomplicated and try to do this silly athletic presentation that just puts no emphasis on selling and everything on just cool moves and reversals and kickouts and 100 miles an hour. It makes no sense. But nonetheless, we are now into an athletic presentation of pro wrestling, and I don't think that's going away anytime soon. Okay, that's my thoughts on Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. You also touched on the GM situation, or Stephanie McMahon returning last week, which I praised as well, surprisingly, after all the I don't even know what you would call it, stomach churning or nauseous overexposure of the authority for many years. Was it 2014 or 15 to 2017? I mean, it was just a crazy long run that didn't need to happen. We got beyond sick of the general manager role. I mean, even Kurt Angle as a general manager didn't help. Even Daniel Bryan as a general manager was not fun, because they felt very scripted. They felt very controlled. They didn't feel like they were speaking in their own voices. And you don't want to see them in a GM role. You want to see them in an in-ring action. That's just the way it is. But with Stephanie McMahon coming back last week, makes sense. They want to do a William Regal type of presentation with the GM role. Yes, I think that's a great solution, because there are times where you need to have that presence there. And it also tells fans that, oh, there is somebody there making those matches. As you mentioned, Waz, there is somebody there, because wrestlers just make matches willy-nilly. And you can't always have that, right? You don't have to have a contract signing for every match, but you need to have that authority figure that is looming that could come out and negate a match, or could reverse a decision, or have a match restarted, or as Stephanie came out last week and made stipulations that if this match ends in DQ, title changes hands, or the person is the Raw Women's Champion. If they're counted out, the title is awarded to the person who was not counted out, right? So there are times and places where a GM is warranted, and in very small doses, it's effective. Because you need to know that somebody's there in power, and we all know it's the McMahon. So anybody trying to bring in another face beyond the McMahons, we all know is just a folly, right? So good. We need a distanced GM. I don't mean a socially distanced GM, although I guess that could apply too. Just literally a distanced GM, where they're there when needed, when there's something big going on. Bottom line, it just needs to be warranted. If it's warranted, yes, GMs are fine. And I think that's the way to go right now. That's the way to go with general managers. So also love that. SmackDown feeling stale. You think it's not as good as Raw. You know, I would say yes and no. I would say the championship picture on SmackDown isn't as strong as Raw. Particularly with the Universal Championship. Because we have The Fiend now versus Braun Strowman at SummerSlam, presumably, for the Universal Championship. And the thing is, I think many of us agree that The Fiend doesn't need the belt. And I think he will be the one to dethrone Braun Strowman at SummerSlam. But does he need it? I would argue no. Yeah, it's a story that these two were together and they met at a swamp and all that. And they've tried to make a story out of it, and I applaud them. Braun Strowman has been showing that he actually has a good promo in his body. That's a plus. But you can't compare Drew McIntyre to Braun Strowman. Drew McIntyre is a guy that the fans have been asking for to become champion for a long time. And Braun Strowman to some degree. But the thing is with Drew McIntyre, again, depth of character, relatability. Drew McIntyre has those qualities. And I would say Braun Strowman does not. Braun Strowman is very one-dimensional still. Yes, he cuts good promos. We understand the history with Bray. But as a person, he doesn't really show you a whole lot. And I know his character is a very kind of heavy-handed monster among men character. I get it. Which, my goodness gracious, has anybody actually ever used their own nickname in a promo? Was it last week on SmackDown? Somebody, did he refer to himself as the monster among men? Or did somebody said, you know, hey, you're the monster among men. Well, did you have somebody say to Stone Cold Steve Austin, well, you're the Texas Rattlesnake? No, you just call him by their name. I don't know. A little pet peeve. But I think SmackDown overall is a little bit, I would say a little bit weaker. As a show, Raw has always had that leg up. It's that feeling you can't shake that Raw is always going to be the baby, the child of Vince McMahon, and SmackDown is the stepchild of Vince McMahon. The one that he pays attention to, but only sometimes, just to kind of keep it going. Whereas Raw is usually, you know, Vince McMahon cradling in his arms and he's feeding him a bottle and, you know, kissing it goodnight. That's what it feels. And sometimes SmackDown feels like it's, you know, getting beat with a broom and stuck under the stairs, right? And in the cupboard or something. I don't know. I get it. And luckily for the women's division, they have Sasha and Bayley on both shows. I mean, that's just smart booking. So let's also start there. I'll continue there with the women's Raw Women's Championship between Sasha and Bayley, or Sasha and Asuka. I'm sorry. I mean, you talk about a pay-per-view quality match. That's exactly the way the announcers framed it, and that's exactly what it should have been called. It was a pay-per-view quality women's championship match. And could it have closed Raw? It could have. It certainly could have. But it, with the way it ended, I don't think, it's probably best that it didn't close Raw. Because here you have a really good match between two absolute pros in Sasha Banks and Asuka. And early in the match, we had Bayley and Kairi Sane duking it out up the ramp. They're out the curtain and bye, right? And these two had, I mean, again, I could watch these two at every pay-per-view. They're just so good together. And the whole thing is, again, great match. Had me believing. I'm thinking they're going to do a clean finish. And what do we get? We get Asuka looking like a fool again. An absolute fool as a babyface. Watching her friend get beat up. And the announcers tried their best, to their credit, saying that she has to choose between her friend and the championship. And that, I get it, because as a babyface, if you're trying to win the championship over saving your friend, you look like a kind of a selfish person. At least that's how it would have been perceived had Asuka decided to go for the championship. Now, here's what I don't understand. Asuka is constantly distracted. I mean, she is one of the most easily distractible baby faces on the roster. She is consistently looking dumb when it comes to being distracted. I mean, I even remember at 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? When Carmella and Asuka were in the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And James Ellsworth appeared. And Asuka stood there as she was about to capture the women's or the Money in the Bank women's ladder match briefcase. And James Ellsworth popped out. And she stood there. I'm serious. It was like a good 15 to 30 seconds staring there with like the most awkward face. Instead of, you know, going for the briefcase that's going to allow you to get a championship opportunity any freaking time you want, she just stood there. I mean, there's also other cases of her being distracted. And it's never a good look. Not just her, but other babyface that are constantly distracted by heels on the outside. Especially when they play their entrance music or when it's on the Titantron, which is the latest foul here. So we get Bayley beating down Kairi Sane in the backstage area. Now, my biggest problem with this isn't even Asuka being distracted again for the 19th time and looking like an absolute fool when you have the championship on the line. My biggest issue was, why the hell is WWE production allowing this to be aired in the middle of a championship match? It's not Bayley that should be credited with this. Unless it comes out that Bayley threatened the cameraman and the TV production truck to air this in the middle of the match. If that's the case, I could understand. I don't believe we're ever going to get an explanation. It's supposed to be that Bayley is the one who's the problem because she somehow magically turned on the Titantron with the camera feed on her and decided to run that while it was the middle of the match. So really, it should be WWE production. The production team are the heels here. Not Bayley. Unless it comes out that she threatened the cameraman or yelled at him, screamed at him to, you know, go live with this right now. That's the only way that I could get around this. Otherwise, it's not Bayley, and they're not going to tell you. I guarantee you. Guaranteed, it's not going to come out that Bayley was threatening the cameraman and screaming at him incessantly to turn the camera on and, you know, put the live feed on her. I guarantee they won't look at that detail. But that's the biggest problem I have with this. Not even Asuka looking like a fool. I just kind of expect her to be, you know, shocked and just looking like a fool half the time. Although she's, you know, I've really enjoyed her as Raw Women's Champion. I really have. I've loved it, actually. She's been more than I thought she would after Becky really passed the torch to her. But the fact that it's WWE production, the guys in the truck, really are the ones responsible for this. Because they're the ones that decide to put the live feed where, right? They are, not Bayley. So, boy, oh boy, that's the biggest misstep I have for this, for what was a really good match. And you know what? Sasha Banks capturing the Raw Women's Championship officially, right move. That is the absolute right move. To me, that was the only move. You could not have the Asuka recapture the belt. I think right now you need to ride high with Bayley and Sasha because they're on a roll that I don't think anyone expected. If this pandemic never happened, I don't believe these two would be together right now. So this pandemic, I think, has been a huge benefit to both Bayley and Sasha for really being able to be, you know, find who they are as the heels, get in their groove, you know, find their chemistry together. I don't believe that they would have been together had the pandemic never happened. So, silver lining, right? Silver lining. But again, Sasha and Bayley killing it every week. Absolutely killing it every week. And especially, it's not just that they're good on the mic and they've got good promos and that they've got good chemistry. They're also backing it up in the ring with good matches. Good to really good matches. So they've got everything firing on all cylinders. And speaking of all cylinders, let's get to Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. You know, several weeks ago, we predicted here and saw rumors floating around that Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre was looked at for the SummerSlam main event. And we certainly considered that a possibility, but I also considered the possibility of Brock Lesnar and or Bobby Lashley coming out of the woodwork. Neither have materialized. Really a big shame for Lashley. I mean, Lashley here is the victim or really the collateral damage, if you will. And so, not to say Lashley's never going to get that chance again, but it's certainly looking less likely, and looking more likely that the plan for Lashley all along was just a one-off. And I hope, really, really hope that's not the case, because, man, are they missing the boat here with Lashley. But it's Randy Orton now who came out and declared that he's missing something. And he's missing the WWE World Championship. And says that, for you, Drew, unfortunately, you have something I need, or that I want. And threatens him that you're not going to see the RKO coming at SummerSlam. And Drew responds in kind, telling Randy Orton that, yeah, I don't have the resume that you do, but nobody here does. So, which honestly, I don't think, I don't think that the resume thing was a particularly strong point, because just because you have a resume doesn't mean that it translates into current ability. It means you've been here for 20 years, as Randy said. So you have 20 years of mileage on your body. And furthermore, the whole number of championship reigns that people love to boast about, why has no one figured out, as a retort to somebody talking about how they have had more championship reigns than the other person, said to them, hey, yeah, you had 12 championship reigns. That means you've lost that belt 12 times, right? How has nobody brought up the fact that just because you say you've held that belt more, it also means, guess what? You've lost that belt more than I have. You've lost that belt. You've lost championship matches more than I have. I mean, how has nobody figured out that that's a really good strategy? And I don't know how no one has picked up on that, but Randy Orton versus Drew, I am excited for it, legitimately excited for it, because I see no losing, no outcome that I don't like. I have one that I prefer slightly more than the other, and that is Randy Orton beating Drew McIntyre and becoming WWE champion. And I think very early prediction, I know it's way early here, but I think that Randy Orton will win at SummerSlam and take that championship from Drew. You know, championship reigns that happen at WrestleMania, particularly when you have a long journey and you have somebody finally climb that mountain at WrestleMania and they win that belt, typically they hold it for a long period of time, and SummerSlam is where you first start to look at where they could lose it. That's typically the first stop, if you will, the first pit stop of they could realistically lose it at this time. WrestleMania to SummerSlam is a very typical title reign in the modern era. So it's not out of the question that Drew could lose here. Certainly not. It is almost 5 months since at that point that SummerSlam happens, almost 5 months since he's held the belt. So granted, he hasn't been able to celebrate in front of fans. We understand that. But when the pandemic ends, and it will, and Drew goes after that championship again, you will see fan support. You will see the fans, I think, even more excited because, number one, the world's somewhat back to normal. I assume this is when a vaccine comes out. And the fans were able to celebrate with Drew winning again. I think that is how WWE is looking at it. And there's no better person right now, no hotter person to put the championship on than Randy Orton. I mean, he doesn't get hotter than this right now. He's on the run of his career. You could argue this is the biggest run of his career. And certainly he is deserving of it. It's not going to feel like his other championship reigns over the last 5 to 7 years, where it's kind of like, oh, Randy Orton's champion. Like, you're semi-interested, but you know that he's just there to kind of make somebody else a star. In this case, for the first time in a long time, Randy as champion is there to make Randy a star. That's what the difference is. To continue this, there's capitalize on his white hot heel persona. that he has absolutely crafted and polished into a fine powder right now. It is just a masterpiece. He's chiseled a masterpiece. I'll figure out. I've got too many analogies in my head. But that's what he's done. He has chiseled out a perfectly crafted heel persona of Randy Orton. He has refined it over 20 years, and he's got it. Boy, has Randy Orton got it. And why wouldn't you want to make this guy champion right now? Fans are going to be pissed. If anybody tells me that's an argument, if anyone tells me that's the reason they shouldn't do it, if somebody ever, like, now, guys, listen to me. If anybody came to you, or you asked them, you said, well, why shouldn't so-and-so be champion? Well, the fans are going to be pissed. If anyone ever says that to you, if anyone ever gives you that answer, you immediately understand they are not true wrestling fans, or that they have not been wrestling fans more than like 5 to 6 months. Because the emotion of anger has really been lost on fans. The value of angering fans should not be understated or lost. I know in WWE's stomach-churning philosophy of giving people smiles or putting smiles on people's faces is counterproductive, because you're missing the point of what makes a great heel. And that is angering fans, truly making fans angry. And in this case, you can't really be mad at creative, because you could say, oh, they're mad at WWE creative. Well, why? They gave Drew a championship run for 5 months. And could you argue anybody's hotter in WWE than Randy Orton? Singles competitor? No. The answer is no. Why wouldn't you want to capitalize on that? Because you got to look down the line too. Edge is on the horizon in the next few months, returning from his triceps injury. And I think that Big Show and Christian and Edge are all going to surround Randy Orton at one point. I mean, I could see that visual, right? When all of these guys are, quote, medically cleared, even though they all are, except for Edge, who's truly injured. I could see all of Randy Orton's victims coming back to, you know, reap what he's sown and surround him and just demolish him. Anybody else see that happening? Maybe at the Rumble or at WrestleMania. At WrestleMania, I could see it happening, where they each get a piece of their own flesh and get retribution on Orton. And Orton is like scrambling and looking around, and it's got moment written all over it for everything that Randy Orton's done to everybody. But nonetheless, the heel thing. Make fans pissed. I want to feel angry. And right now I am angry at Randy Orton. Randy Orton has not gotten, again, this is awesome. Awesome booking here. They have not allowed Randy Orton to be laying flat on his back with Raw going off the air. I mean, he has not been hit with a finisher other than Big Show's chokeslam, which is that really a finish? It's kind of like a signature move last week on Raw. When's the last time he was hit with a finish? Backlash with Edge, but he's never been pinned in the ring. But he hasn't been pinned in the ring in a very long time, 6 months plus. It's been brilliantly done. Randy Orton, I'm sure, is loving this because he has people he actually wants to work with. He has to do minimal mileage on his body because he's the one dishing out the punishment right now. This is just brilliant all the way around, and I would say pull the trigger. You know, have Randy Orton beat Drew McIntyre. I think that's actually a pretty solid choice and a pretty, I mean, I don't want to say it's the only choice, because if Drew retains, hey, we love Drew as champion. But why blow the heat off Randy Orton? He's not the one to do it. This is a professional rivalry between Drew and Randy. It's not personal like Edge or with Christian or Big Show. Why would you have Drew McIntyre be the one to finally flatten Orton? No. As great as Drew McIntyre is, Randy Orton right now needs to be flattened by the man named Edge. So you don't blow the heat off with somebody that's professional, a professional rivalry with. You blow the heat off with the guy that's deserving of it. So continue to build the heat with Orton, and I think Orton's going to become champion. And then you have a championship match between Edge and Randy Orton at WrestleMania in an I Quit match, which is apparently the plan. So let me know what you guys think, though, by the way. Let me know what you guys think. Another thing that I was looking at as I was watching a little bit of AEW, believe it or not, it's kind of akin to MJF. I know this is not an AEW review by any sorts. It's not. But if you guys watch AEW, MJF is he's undefeated in a singles role. He's got one loss, where AEW actually keeps track of their wins and losses. Imagine that. And AEW or MJF has one loss in a tag team match, of which he wasn't even involved in the decision of. He was not the one pinned. And they continue to build heat on MJF. MJF is a true heel through and through. He plays it on Twitter. He plays it in when he's doing signings, flipping off kids. He truly wants to be hated. And that's the kind of heel that will succeed and make big money for the company and for themselves. Are guys and gals that go all in and stop with their social media, stuff that they put on where, oh, I just had a match with so-and-so, but now we're out for a beer now. Look at us being pals. I mean, that's what they do. It's not good. It's not good because what makes pro wrestling special is when you believe. Even when you know what you're seeing is not real, if you can suspend that in your brain and get caught up in the story, you forget that what you're watching isn't real as far as scripted or real competition. So, all right. Well, I think I've spent enough on Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre, which I expect to be honestly a really good match at SummerSlam. Street Profits now have their sights set on Angel Garza and Andrade. Probably their biggest win to date, beyond Andrade winning the United States Championship, of course, many months ago. But it's good that these two are getting a shot. Really good, because to me, the Street Profits have become a joke. I said that at the top of the show. They've become a comedy act that nobody wants to see be a comedy act. At least I don't. I know Montez Ford has his red cup. I get it. It's part of his gimmick. I don't understand. I don't like it. I think it's very frat house-ish, right? Like, or any kind of like college party. Is he trying to relate to the younger crowd that, ooh, red solo cups? I know red solo cups. Oh, I can relate. I used to play beer pong with that. Cool. So now I relate to Montez Ford. No, right? Like, I think that's the logic, that Red Solo Cup has a very... Red Solo Cup, if anybody is under the age of 35, or I shouldn't say, 35 and under, so I can include myself. Maybe even 40 and under. How about that? That feels better for myself. When we see Red Solo Cups, what do we think? You immediately think beer pong or flip cup, right? That's what we think of. We think of our college days with, like, I don't know, Busch Light or Milwaukee's Best or Keystone Light or whatever discount beer of the day that we were able to afford. And Montez Ford has that solo cup as a representation of something that he's drinking. And I get it. I'm probably over analyzing the cup thing, but I've always just kind of like wondered, hey, what was the thinking behind the cup? Is it to relate to the younger crowd? I don't know. But nonetheless, we now have a real championship match here in front of us. And I hope Angel Garza and Andrade win the match tag team champions, because not only are they deserving of it, it would be a nice change of pace for the Raw tag team championships, because boy, do they need a little bit of help after the anything you can do, I can do better challenge that plagued us for weeks. And now you'd have two pure wrestling athletes, I should call them, being able to come out there and put on excellent matches every single show. They finally seem to be on the same page. And bonus, Zelina Vega is their mouthpiece. That can't be overstated enough. Zelina Vega, just even in the little things she does, the way that she... This is so small, but the way that she dismissed somebody that was in the audience on Monday night, last night, like just kind of like, you know, talk to the hand, but like a disgusted look, just little things like that, that she does. She has an authenticity about her that is unmatched. I don't know how else to put it with her. I mean, I've sung her praises so many times at nauseam here, but on the show, but she does things that are just, she just has the believability, authenticity. And it's very rare in the product today. So I really hope that those two capture the Raw women or the Raw Tag Team Championships. It's certainly overdue. And I think the Tag Team Championships need a little bit of a boost after the silliness that was the bowling and the javelin and all that stuff that was, well, not my cup of tea. I'll keep it PG. And actually, as I'm reading this, or as recording this, I'm reading that Kyrie Sane is actually officially done with WWE. I hate to jump back to that, but she is done with WWE. That beatdown from Bayley was a way to write her off. And Kyrie Sane put out a tweet that said, "You know, my time in NXT and WWE locker rooms was incredible. Everyone was kind, funny, and talented, so every day was full of happiness. Also, I was saved by the supportive staff behind the scenes. I will forever love and respect all these professionals I had the pleasure of working with." So, Kyrie Sane is off to Japan to get married, go back home, and wow. So I guess that's that with Kyrie Sane. You know, to me, one of the more underutilized talents in WWE that I think they could have done more with, and I thought they would have. And she seemed uninspired at times. So that whole "every day is full of happiness" thing is a bunch of nonsense, because I saw firsthand that it wasn't. But hey, what job is? But you know, hey, Kyrie Sane is gone. I think that she's going to be missed by a lot of fans, because a lot of fans followed her from NXT to the call up when she was called up to main roster, and then they didn't do a whole lot with her. She had some really good matches with Becky Lynch along the way. The tag team championship run with Asuka on SmackDown was certainly a highlight. But overall, I think it was one that was a little bit under. She was a talent that was underutilized. There's no question about it. So, all right. Well, let's move down the line here and see what else happened on Monday Night Raw. And Lashley versus Mustafa Ali. Again, good match. Lashley got the full Nelson on Mustafa Ali, who tapped out. Lashley continues to dominate, but in the mid to lower to mid card. And so I mentioned Lashley has just been a disappointment in terms of the booking of him, not his character itself, or MVP has been his mouthpiece. Just the overall, really hot-shotting Lashley and not allowing him to really grow. I know he's dominating the mid to, again, lower to mid card. That's great, but he can do more. So, again, Dolph Ziggler versus Drew McIntyre. I didn't really touch on the match itself. Drew McIntyre I don't even know what to say. It was very, very much like their Extreme Rules match at Extreme Rules. But why would Drew McIntyre not give Dolph the same stipulation that he gave him at Extreme Rules? Meaning, I can have the Extreme Rules only apply to me, not you. I guess he's a babyface, so he wants to make sure that it's a fair fight. Again, anytime a babyface is allowed to pick a stipulation, they fail miserably. They look like idiots. Why would you? Again, it's because, well, he's a babyface. You don't want to do something that's unethical. You have the opportunity to do anything you want, and you just even the playing field of making an Extreme Rules match, or let's make it a steel cage, right? Make it a false count anywhere. How does that benefit the person making the stipulation? If the rules apply to both evenly, it never, ever is a good look when the babyface gets to make a stipulation, because it's never to their advantage. It's always to just even the playing field, or it's a stipulation that could have been picked by management, right? Like, it doesn't have to be picked by that person because they didn't do anything to create an advantage for themselves. So anyway, that's just a babyface picking a stipulation that is never works out well, because they always look like fools. But you're not saying Drew is a fool, but the babyface logic in picking stipulations are foolish, because it just never makes sense. But Dolph, again, super talented. The zigzag is probably the most kicked out of finisher in the history of finishers. But another really good match from Drew and Dolph. I had no issues with it. Drew getting a Claymore kick on Dolph through the table was a nice finish. Where the hell's Bobby Roode, by the way? We were told he was in tandem with Drew McIntyre, or with Dolph Ziggler, a trade for AJ Styles to SmackDown. So maybe we'll get a tag team reunification of Bobby Roode, Robert Roode, and Dolph Ziggler next week, as Dolph inevitably goes back down to something less important, so to speak. So that's just, I think, not even a question. But all right, well, I know we also got Humberto Carrillo versus Murphy. I mean, Murphy wins. I with Murphy's Law, I have no problem with that. As Murphy, I think, is honestly has a little bit more going for him, therefore needs to win more, as he's associated with associated with Seth. And, geez, how did I forget this? I know I'm kind of hot-shotting things, but things I'm forgetting. Murphy ended up jamming the eye of Aleister Black into the steps, reluctantly. And Seth had to slap him into doing it. And he did it reluctantly and then fell into some kind of trance of, like, almost as if he was thinking, who am I? Why did I just really do that? That's not me. But accepted it, seemed to accept it. And I guess that now we have Aleister Black blinded in an eye for however many weeks. So we will have to see about that. So overall, a good Monday Night Raw. We got some progression towards SummerSlam. Some official, you know, main event now is set for SummerSlam and Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre for the WWE Championship. I love it. It's got some a lot of ramifications there. Some big time consequences, and I think Randy Orton will end up capturing the championship belt. That's just my thought, 4 weeks out here. But let me know what you guys think. RealWWEPodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at WWE_podcast, and be happy to speak with you there. Also, again, if you want to send us a voicemail, you can do so by emailing it to me, or easier than that, you just have to call me, which is just a voicemail. It's not my number, promise. 518-952-0247. So I think that's it from my Monday Night Raw review. Tomorrow night, I've got Wrestling Nostalgia and a fun one. It's going to be a show all about the very first SmackDown that ever debuted in August of 1999, where we saw The Rock versus Triple H for the WWF Championship, with Shawn Michaels as a special guest referee. So it's going to be a fun show to review, as the very first SmackDown debuted again in August of 1999. 21 years ago, we got the very first SmackDown. But I remember it very well, as I know some of you do as well. So I think that's it, guys. Head on over to the website at WWEPodcast.com. We've got a new article up. We've got a new contributor there who just published an article about the women's division taking over the men's division. Has it officially happened? And we've also got some news stories that we're starting to add to the website as well. It's not just going to be podcasts anymore. We're trying to add news as we can. It's not, you know, we're kind of in the working stages of that, but I think news is the way to go right now and not just podcasts. So alrighty, guys, you know the deal. I'll be back tomorrow reviewing the very first edition of SmackDown in August of 1999, and then Thursday will be AEW and NXT, and you know the schedule for the rest of the week. So, everybody, thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.